All right, Wrestling with Theology fans, this is Pastor Doug Minton here with you to stand in the confessional corner again, looking through the history of what is going on around the world and especially throughout Europe during the time of the Reformation. So this month, we go north of London to Edinburgh, Scotland, to talk about John Knox and the Scottish Reformation. But before we get to Knox, we have to take a look at what led up to the Reformation. So we start off with King James V of Scotland, who, when he was 17 months old, on September 9th, 1513, was crowned the King of Scotland. He was born to King James IV and Margaret Tudor, King Henry VII of England's daughter. James was under many regents until he finally escaped the custody of his stepfather, Archibald Douglas, the 6th Earl of Angus. James's first action as undisputed king was to exile his stepfather and confiscate all the lands that belonged to the family. James's reign saw the beginnings of the Reformation as the Scots looked to the south at what his uncle, King Henry VIII, was doing in England. However, James saw Henry's break with the Roman Church to be his chance to gain political capital in Europe. He strove to keep the Reformation ideals from coming into Scotland. He did not tolerate heresy in Scotland. Patrick Hamilton was burned at the stake at St. Andrews on February 29, 1528, to become the first martyr of the Scottish Reformation. Pope Paul III declares James a defender of the faith in 1537. Through his diplomatic correspondence, James was offered the title of High King of Ireland in 1540, a title that had been vacated since 1198. That was what a great diplomat James V was. James dies in December of 1542 after the Scottish were defeated by the English at the Battle of Solway Moss in November of that year. So his daughter Mary, Queen of Scots, succeeds him as Queen of Scotland on December 14th, 1542, at the ripe old age of 6 days old. Her first regent was James Hamilton, Earl of Arran, the next in line for the throne after her. She married Francis, the Dauphin of France, in 1558, but Francis died in December of 1560. And throughout her reign, she openly struggled with John Knox over the Reformation teachings. Mary is also known for her attempt to assassinate Queen Elizabeth I and become the Queen of England because she was the great-granddaughter of Henry VII. This became known as the Babington Plot. Despite being a devout Roman Catholic herself, Mary tolerated the Scottish Reformation Parliament that had arisen during her absence in France. Mary married Henry Stuart, Lord Darnley, in February 1561. This infuriated many of the Protestant bigwigs in Scotland, including her half-brother, James Stuart, the 1st Earl of Moray. James and other Protestant lords openly rebelled against her. Lord Darnley was assassinated in February 1567. In April of that year, Mary was abducted by Lord Bothwell, who would become her third husband the following month. Royal families are crazy. Just saying that. In June of that year, the Confederate lords turned against Mary and Bothwell at Carberry Hill. There was no battle, but the negotiations took too long, and Mary's army dwindled through desertion. Bothwell was given safe passage from the field, but the lords took Mary back to Edinburgh, where she was denounced as an adulteress and a murderer. On July 24, 1567, Mary abdicated the throne of Scotland. Her one-year-old son, James VI, succeeded her. She would go to England, where she would be imprisoned and later executed in February 1587. So we have this great twisting of plots throughout the Scottish royalty, as we have James V, Mary Queen of Scots, and now James VI, which we talked about last month in the English Reformation, who becomes James I of England, the one who authorizes the translation of the Bible into English. But in the midst of all this political intrigue and royal wranglings, we also have Mary of Guise, the queen regent who was James V's second wife. She was queen regent of Scotland from April 12, 1554 until June 11, 1560. Throughout her regency, Mary tolerated the ideas for reformation in Scotland as long as it did not disrupt the alliances between Scotland and France. Unfortunately, she was not able to prevent the Scottish Reformation as it took on. The Lords of the Congregations were a group of Protestant nobles who sought to force the Reformation on Scotland. Much like Karlstadt in Germany, their reforms began with iconoclasm in 1558. Around that same time, Queen Elizabeth I of England came to secretly support the Lords of the Congregation. And in January 1560, strengthened by English ships, the Protestant nobles finally gained the upper hand in the fighting against Mary's Roman Catholic troops. Mary would die of dropsy on June 11, 1560. So let's look at this group, the Lords of the Congregation, a little bit closer. They form in December of 1557 as a group of Scottish lords opposed to the marriage of Mary, Queen of Scots, to the Dauphin of France. They want nothing to do with an alliance between Scotland and France. Following religious riots in Perth, they gained support and provided military help for John Knox in opposing Mary of Guise. In June 1559, the Lords gained enough support to face off against the combined French and Scottish army. The next month saw the Lords gain control of Edinburgh. The Lords brought in an English army to assist them. After Mary of Guise died, the Lords gained control over the Scottish Reformation Parliament, as it became known. That government, that parliament that was primarily Protestant in nature, convened in August 1560. Their first action was to abolish the jurisdiction of the Roman Catholic Church in Scotland with the Papal Jurisdiction Act. Shortly thereafter, the Scots Confession was drafted by John Knox, John Wyndham, John Spottiswood, John Wilrock, John Douglas, and John Rowe. Apparently, Scotland just had a plethora of Johns at that time. The confession was read twice before Parliament adopted it on August 17th. After the Scots confession was ratified, the first book of discipline was written up. A second book of discipline came along in 1581. But most of the work done by the Reformation Parliament was finally ratified by James VI in 1567. So they get all of this stuff done in a year or two, and it's still five more years down the road before James VI makes it official for Scotland to be a Protestant nation. Now we've gone through all of this, and the one person that typically gets all the notice in the Scottish Reformation is John Knox, because he is the one who kind of covers the gamut of everything that is the Reformation era. John Knox was born in 1514 in Gifford Gate, Haddington, Scotland. He studied at the University of St. Andrew to become a notary priest. He joined the Reformation movement within the Scottish Church early on, until he was exiled to England in 1549. While in exile, Knox rose through the ranks of the Church of England. He exerted great influence on the text of the Book of Common Prayer during King Edward VI's reign. When Queen Mary rose to the throne, Knox was forced to resign and fled to Geneva, where he met John Calvin. In Geneva, he became more acquainted with Reformed theology and Presbyterian polity in particular. He wrote a new order of service, which was adopted by the Church of Scotland. He left Geneva for Frankfurt to lead the English refugee church there. He ran into issues there over the liturgy, which ended his association with the Church of England completely. But Knox is best known for that transition from the Roman Catholic Church in Scotland to the forms of Presbyterianism that have become known even especially in the United States. Although there was some influence over Anglicanism, it was short-lived as successive books of common prayer took more and more of his stuff out. but he saw Presbyterianism as the proper biblical polity for the church, that every church is governed by elders that then come together for consistories, that it's not the bishops and it's not the pastors that are there who are over the church, but it is the lay people. And although he died on November 24, 1572 in Edinburgh, most of his teachings, most of his work in the Church of Scotland was not implemented for another century later in 1689. So John Knox has this great aura about him of his work in the Scottish Reformation, but it doesn't take effect for a century after his death. Well, what are you going to do? It's the Scottish people. I say that as part Scotch myself. So here is the Scottish Reformation. It's kind of a jumble of things. We don't want to be Roman Catholic, but now with Knox, we don't want to be Anglican either. So what we have is the advent of what becomes Presbyterianism, which has numerous denominations in Scotland and the rest of the UK, in Europe, as well as a dozen or more prominent ones in the U.S. So therefore, John Knox has a decent influence on the Reformation. But like Scotland is way out there as compared to the rest of the continent of Europe, so also Knox's influence is way out there in consideration of his timeline. But I diverge a little too far from the field just to say that, yes, we hold up John Knox as kind of the cornerstone of the Scottish Reformation, but he gets ignored for 100 years after his death. Well, that just shows that all of us, regardless of what kind of great things we do in this life, will likely be forgotten after we die. That's not the note I wanted to end on, but it is kind of there as we tie up the Scottish Reformation. Next month, we go in back into the German areas, not quite back to Wittenberg yet, because not only are we having the Wittenberg and Luther and Melanchthon and all of those guys, you know, getting things situated in Germany, but also in Germany and in the areas around the Holy Roman Empire, we also have what become known as the Anabaptists. And this is a group that we talk about a lot, especially in the Augsburg Confession. So we are looking at them next month as we keep going towards this goal of back into Germany for what we see coming up as the cornerstones of the Lutheran Reformation especially, but continuing on what all Protestants look forward to. But until then, this is Pastor Doug Minton, thanking you for being here, supporting this podcast, and learning a little bit more about the history around the Lutheran Reformation, of places where, why we have some of the denominations we have, especially the Presbyterian ones this month. May God's grace be with you. Until next time, amen.